on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Welcome to InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. We try to bring you useful information and answer any questions you might have, as long as they're financial.
Hi, this is Dan from Walnut Creek, California, and I had a question on dividends. I was wondering, if you reinvest dividends, do you get taxed twice for them, once at the end of the year, and then once when you go and sell that stock? Thank you.
No. You get taxed by the dividend, and if you reinvest the dividend into more shares, your cost basis changes because you're buying more shares at that time of the dividend being issued to you. So your cost basis changes for that purchase. Therefore, if the stock doesn't go up from there, there will be no capital gains from that purchase. If you bought the other shares at a lower price, you'll have capital gains for them. Okay? So, you know, that's how that works. You do not get taxed twice.
Let's go to James in Sonoma. Wants to talk about bonds or preferred stocks.
Yes, my IRA is tremendously out of balance, as you can, I'm sure you're facing in your accounts. So I want to limit it not to individual stocks, but not to individual bonds or preferred stocks. Just like make it apples to apples, ETF or bonds going in an IRA. I've got bonds also. I've got ETFs. This is just trying to balance it a little bit more. Which would you pick and why?
When you're saying ETFs, are you talking about a preferred share ETF?
Preferred ETF and a preferred bond. And a bond, bond ETF.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't love fixed income assets within the ETFs. I rather own the bonds directly. So if you can own bonds directly, that's what I would recommend. Now, preferred stocks can be okay. What I don't like about the preferred stocks is that they're highly sensitive to higher interest rates. The duration risk is typically a lot higher, and obviously unless you're buying really, really long-term bonds. So that's number one. In an environment where inflation is likely to remain persistently high, where interest rates are likely to go higher to some degree rather than lower, I don't like that. And then also, with bonds, you're near the top of the capital structure. With preferreds, you're kind of in the middle. Yeah, you're better than the equities, but you're far down from the bond. Bondholders are going to get in a bankruptcy. They're a lot more protected than you, the preferred shareholder. So if I'm picking one or the other, I'm going bonds because of those reasons. Thanks for the call.
Hi, Justin or Steve. This is Nick in Nebraska. Wanted to ask a quick question about a Roth IRA account that I have some stocks in. Back during the shutdown of 2020, I bought 10 shares of Avis at $10 a piece, and today they were up at $360. So I figured it would be a good time to sell at least one of those shares. So I did. But I was curious, being that it's a Roth IRA, my understanding is that that's for retirement. So am I going to incur a penalty because I sold something before retirement? Just curious as to the answer on something like that. I'll look forward to hearing from you on the podcast. Thank you.
The answer is no. You don't pay any taxes on a Roth IRA. So all the growth that you just had on that very good pick that you did, you will never have to pay taxes, and you can sell it anytime you want to. You can buy and sell in your IRA and your Roth IRA and not pay taxes on the capital gains. The beauty about a Roth is you never have to pay taxes on that money. Never. At a regular IRA, when you start withdrawing it at retirement age, that money you withdraw in the year that you withdraw it, however much, is added to your adjusted gross income for that year, and you have to pay income tax on it. So the Roth, never. Regular IRA, yes, you have to pay income tax when you start drawing it out. And you can't not draw it out. They force you at age 72 to start taking that money out. It used to be 70. They changed it to 70 years old. Now it's 72 years old. So, no, don't worry about paying taxes on either one of those. Capital gain taxes don't apply. Okay, good question, though. Thank you for asking. You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
The InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes.
I have a question for you about Amazon.
So your questions keep coming.
A question about P.E. ratios.
And that's okay, because Steve Peasley and Justin Klein specialize in unbiased guidance.
If I'm looking at a dividend company, I'm looking for consistency of earnings and dividends.
Your standard daily chart typically goes back 1 year.
No question is too simple.
Wanted to ask about Teladoc.
And each question is an important part of the podcast.
My wife has a rollover 401k from a previous employer. I was curious if this is eligible to be used to do a backdoor Roth.
Steve and Justin are fearless.
That's fairly inexpensive for this kind of explosive growth.
The problem here is that you're picking a leveraged ETF.
Tell your friends and family members about InvestTalk.
You've been instrumental in my understanding how this market works.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hey, Justin and Steve, this is Anwar calling from DC. I'm calling today to ask you sort of a philosophical question in two parts. The first part is, I own a home that I'm currently renting out, and I have some extra cash in my budget every month. And I'm wondering, is it smarter to invest that cash back into the home to pay off my mortgage sooner? I've done the math. If I invest that cash, I'll pay off my mortgage about 10 years sooner. And I'll save myself something like $80,000. And to me, that's a guaranteed $80,000 back into my bank account. And conversely, I could take that same cash and throw it into my government savings plan, my TSP, and that's been doing fairly well for me, 16%, but it has the inherent associated risk of being an investment versus a guaranteed percentage that the bank has secured offering me the loan. I'd really like to know your perspective on that. I appreciate everything you guys have do, longtime listener in the past 3 years, and I look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast.
Well, you broke down that perfectly. And that's the way you need to think about it is, and that's for everyone out there looking at paying down their mortgage, is when you pay down your mortgage faster than necessary, you are basically guaranteeing yourself that particular rate that your mortgage has, that mortgage carries. Now, I don't know if this is an investment property, which if it is, it probably has a little bit higher interest rate. So that's something to think about. But when it comes to your TSP, the first thing you have to ask is, are you getting some sort of match? I don't know if you can get that within a TSP, but if you're getting a company match of some sort, you definitely want to make sure you're maxing that out, because that 50% or 100%, even if it's 25% match, whatever that is, that guaranteed is going to exceed whatever you're guaranteed on that mortgage. Then it comes down to your risk tolerance level. What type of risk are you taking with your other assets? What type of risk are you comfortable with? What type of volatility are you comfortable with? Because you can go put it in the market and you're going to have volatility. But over the long run, you should get much better than, 3-4% rate that you're getting or you're paying on your mortgage. Now, the TSP definitely makes it a little bit less attractive, because TSPs are so limited. I mean, it's kind of sad and gross how limited TSPs are, and therefore it makes it even less attractive to contribute to that TSP. So It's hard for me to give you a straight answer. It's really about how aggressive you want to be. Is that a goal to really pay off that mortgage? Maybe you want to live off of that interest on the rent income from that property in the near future. And maybe that becomes more of a priority to pay that down. But if you think of the numbers, just straight numbers and nothing to do with your risk tolerance levels, you're going to earn more longer term in the markets. So like the earnings yield of the market, you know, in the low to mid 20s, 4 or 5% there, tax deferred on the TSP as well. So that's how you have to think about it. Raw numbers, no emotions, more money into the markets.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Paul in Alabama. I've been listening to your comments recently about being kind of bullish on natural gas long-term. I do own some petroleum stocks and some of the support companies like Schlumberger and that. But should I wait a little bit for the prices come down? They seem to have a pretty good run over the past several months. So should I wait for a better buying opportunity to get into something like EOG? Or should I just go ahead and do it now? Thanks.
I think I would wait for a pullback in either, you know, we've had a very good run in natural gas, right? I mean, but nothing goes up straight in a straight line. And EOD, for instance, did have a pullback in October from 6 down to 540, where it found support. Now it's at 583. So if it breaks above 6, I'd probably go ahead and buy it because it's a breakout. That's a lot of resistance at $6. So I'd wait for either a pullback into the 550 area or a breakout above 6. If you're talking about EOD, WF Golden Dividend Opportunities ETF, that's a closed-end fund, matter of fact, not even an open-end ETF. I would wait for a pullback to try to get it at better prices. I don't like to buy when something's already made a pretty strong run. And sometimes I miss out because it continues to make that run. Trust me, I understand that. But, you know, I know we can't all buy at the bottom. That's not happening. But charting really helps you decide where and when to buy things. So, you know, I would follow a chart on the various stocks you're following and buy them on pullbacks or breakouts. That's what they call those things.
Now let's squeeze in one more caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Steve. I'm calling with a question about the book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street by Burton Malkiel. And I had a question about the chapter that has to do with technical analysis, chapter 6. There's a lot of talk about, you know, different technical systems, and basically the main reason that the author is kind of pointing to these systems not working is because of the transaction fees with trading equities. And since nowadays we don't really have a whole lot of transaction fees, I'm wondering if a lot of these approaches, such as, say, the filter system, would be something that is worth looking into. So I was wondering if you guys could maybe discuss that a little bit on the show. That would be wonderful. Thank you for all you guys do, and take care. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Well, first, let's address A Random Walk Down Wall Street. I read it in college, and I think it's complete bunk. Just go look at 08 and what happened then. And basically, it's saying that all available information is known, so the markets are efficient. Well, clearly, markets are more emotional than efficient. And so I think the whole premise of A Walk Down Wall Street is wrong. And then when it comes to technical analysis, you're right. There used to be a drag on performance for traders and those that use technical analysis to get in and out of positions because of commissions. Well, that's no longer really the case. Yes, there are some small, I guess you could call spreads that Robinhood and the other brokers are making now by selling order flow and all that. And that's certainly true. And maybe you'll get a better fill in the past than you would have before. And so those fees are maybe more hidden. But they're certainly a lot less than they used to be. And so I think technical analysis definitely works. Has its strengths, let's say that, has its strengths, and is a great toolkit to have, especially if you're a short-term trader, a medium-term trader. Technicals oftentimes completely override the fundamentals, especially with money flow, with indexing being so automated today. There's so much money flow with the Reddit crowd and the Robinhood traders that are chasing story stocks, and oftentimes that can override any fundamental changes as well. Now, long-term, earnings matter, cash flows matter. We know that over a long period of time. And long, I say a long period, talking 20 years, you know, 15, 20 years. That's a long period of time. And so I do think, though, if you are a shorter-term trader, you can use technical analysis, and it will be a great tool for you to make put the odds in your favor, okay, beyond just the fundamental analysis.
You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We want to answer your questions. Our listener line number is always ready for you, 888-99-CHART. Beginning our experience, we're here to answer your questions.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Again, thank you so much for everything. I got an email from you guys. You guys sent a free PDF saying Value Investing Worksheet. I really appreciate that. That has helped me out. Quick question on this worksheet. You were explaining a couple of things in quantitative data. The first one says return on invested capital, ROIC. I understand that. Now, when I look at the metrics on, let's say, Fidelity or FinViz, I only see ROI. Is that the same thing, ROI and ROIC? And which is more important? Return on equity or return on invested capital? Looking forward to the answer, and thank you so much for the valuable information. Bye.
All right, well, this goes to the heart of why it's difficult to really do the research on your own without paying for some tools. And that's why I say when you're looking at a broker, the tools that they can give you free of charge oftentimes is more important, especially in the day and age where the cost of trading is nothing. Okay, so that's first off. So finding good data is important. And then the difference between return on equity and return on invested capital are as follows. Return on equity is calculating your return to shareholders based on the equity capital within the capital structure of a business and a balance sheet. Whereas return on invested capital takes into account debt and equity. So oftentimes return on equity will be skewed because of the leverage, the amount of debt that a company has on its balance sheet. So to have to calculate a return on equity, you take the return on assets times its leverage. So if its return on assets are low, but it has high leverage, its return on equity can look very, very good. But the problem is when if it's a cyclical business and times are tough and that return on assets goes, say, negative, suddenly or goes to zero, suddenly that return on equity disappears rather fast and it can go strongly the opposite direction. Okay, so that's the issue with return on equity. Return on invested capital it calculates it using both debt and equity. And so it's going to usually it's a lower number, and it allows you to kind of filter out for that leverage factor. And so if I'm going to pick one or the other, I'm going to pick return on invested capital over return on equity because it takes into account all of the capital on its balance sheet, not just the equity. Hope that helps.
InvestTalk is always made better when our listeners contribute their questions.
Hi guys, Lee from North Carolina here. I had a question about Stitch Fix, ticker SFIX.
So tell your friends and family members they can interact in real time with Steve Peasley and Justin Klein during the InvestTalk live stream program between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Hey Justin, Steve, this is Phil in Washington, D.C. Love you guys. I've learned so much.
or they can leave their questions anytime 24/7 in the InvestTalk voice bank.
Look forward to hearing your answers on the podcast. Thanks.
Remember, for live or recorded questions, the number never changes. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, John from Sunnyvale. Hey, my question is, for a fixed income part of a portfolio, what do you think of the TIP ETF that invests in Treasury inflation-protected securities right now? In particular, given the duration is 7.6 years and interest rates and also inflation are both expected to rise. Also, how do you compare this relative to other fixed income investment alternatives right now? Like, for example, maybe an ETF or a closed-end fund of corporate bonds or munis, maybe with a shorter duration, perhaps a ladder corporate bonds where you'd have less interest rate risk. Thanks.
Well, of those, I like the laddered corporate bonds best. I like to own the actual bonds and have a number of them and kind of manage my own little mini mutual fund of bonds. I don't have a problem with the TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, TIPS, because inflation is increasing. The base rate is pretty low where it starts because the 10-year and the 2-year are very low, so it's a very low rate starting, but they keep adding every 6 months. They readjust the return based on inflation. As inflation goes up, they pay more, TIPS pay more yield. You get more, make more money. So I kind of like that idea. I don't like the ETF or bond funds. You know, in general, I don't like them because the values will go down as interest rates rise. The net asset value of the fund will go down as interest rates rise. Maybe a multi maturity date type fund might work where they can lean on shorter terms right now instead of the long terms. But again, I like you buying corporate bonds, quality corporate bonds first. And when I say quality, they don't have to be AAA. That's not the way the place to be because they don't pay hardly anything. You have to get down to the BBB+ area. And you start getting some good payments. And there's great companies down there. Don't think that they're bad companies. They're not. They're not. BBB+ are good quality bonds. And you can get, 3, 4%, 4.5%. And that's a sweet spot right now, in my opinion. You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. And you can get through right now.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, this is Brian from Laguna Beach, California. I just wanted to see if you can go over the quick ratio and how we can use that among what the price to earnings ratio and other financial measures to pick a good stock. Thank you.
Well, Laguna Beach, well, you are local here. I'm right now in Laguna Beach as well. It's where I live. And you're looking at the quick ratio. Now, you talked about it as price to sales, and it sounded like some other ratios. And just because they're ratios doesn't mean that they are used the same way. When you're looking at price to sales, price to earnings, enterprise value to EBITDA, all these different valuation metrics, what you're doing is you're looking at what kind of multiple of that metric the market is putting on the name. And you may decide that's too low, too high compared to different companies in the industry, et cetera. And that's how you look at those type of ratios. But the quick ratio is not a valuation ratio. It is a balance sheet metric. And it's fairly simple. And it's a good way to understand the solvency, the liquidity of a particular company. Now, it's quick and it's dirty, so it's by no means perfect. But it can help you understand a company that maybe has a decent amount of debt, whether or not it's in good financial standing. Now, what is the quick ratio? It's current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Now, what does all that mean? Well, current assets are assets that are going to likely turn into cash, or can turn into cash, or maybe is cash very quickly. Current liabilities are liabilities you must pay in the next year. The idea is, you want current assets minus inventory. So inventory, it's assumed you're going to turn into cash in the near term, but it's not guaranteed. So we're going to back out inventory from that those current assets. And then what is left over? And is that higher than current liabilities, or is that lower than current liabilities? If it's higher, it means you have enough cash, you have enough liquidity, in theory, to pay off all those liabilities that are coming up due in the next year. Now, if you don't, that could be a problem. It means you might default on those liabilities. And that's what that is there for. It's just an accounting metric. It's not anything that's going to give you an understanding whether the company is cheap or expensive.
888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. Let's go to James in New York. Wants to talk about 401ks. James.
Yes, good evening. So I'd like to kind of piggyback off of a question a gentleman asked about a month ago. And the question was about speaking about how his 401k contributions were not happening every pay period, but they were happening on like a monthly basis. And your response to that was that it's wrong. I was just hoping to see if you could maybe emphasize on that answer. It's wrong. How wrong is it? What does that mean? Is it?
Well, it doesn't.
Is it illegal?
No, it's not illegal. It's possible, but very remotely possible, it could be okay. But when you put in a percentage of your payroll to be taken, which is whatever it is, okay, then an employer matches, I've never heard it not be based on whatever pay period you're on. If you're on a weekly pay period or biweekly or monthly, for it to skip a weekly pay period and be once a month, that's possible. It could be set up that way, but I've never heard anybody do it. Therefore, I think he needs to check into it. If he says he wanted to put 10%, are they taking 10% of that pay period for 2 weeks or 10% for the whole 4 weeks, but they're only taking it every other paycheck? It does not sound right to me. So therefore, you need to check it. But as far as being illegal, no, it just got to be wrong, you know, but you just got to fix it. Now, the employer, you know, may have to owe back contributions. That's possible if they, you know, if they're supposed to contribute, you know, 4% of pay period. But again, from my point of view, I don't know what exactly that benefit to them on the 401k actually specifies. And I've been doing this for years and years and years, you know, and I do it for my own employees. And I, in the past, have sold 401ks. So I know how they're structured, and it just sounded wrong to me. James, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. I really do. Yeah, so just check to make sure. You should always verify. I have a fairly new employee, went on our 401k plan last week, and they took the money out, and I matched, but it didn't show up in his paycheck 401k plan. Didn't show up. So the money's floating around somewhere. That's what I mean. You got to check to make sure. Once it's up and running and, you know, there's no glitches, you're fine. But, you know, especially initially, you got to really make sure it's done and set up correctly.
The InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes.
I have a question for you about Amazon.
So your questions keep coming.
A question about P.E. ratios.
And that's okay, because Steve Peasley and Justin Klein specialize in unbiased guidance.
If I'm looking at a dividend company, I'm looking for consistency of earnings and dividends.
Your standard daily chart typically goes back 1 year.
Steve and Justin are fearless, so don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Noel in Napa, and he wants to ask about a book.
Yeah, hi, Justin. Yeah, I'm currently reading The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. I'm sure you're aware of that book. Mm-hmm. And this one is the latest revised edition. I think it's copyright 2003, so it's the latest one. But, of course, this comes from way in the past, Benjamin Graham. But this has the preface and appendix by Warren Buffett, and it has commentary by Jason Zweig. But anyhow, on page 405, Benjamin Graham warns, convertible securities always come out of the woodwork near the end of a bull market, largely because even poor quality companies then have stock returns high enough to make a conversion future attractive. But I haven't heard the word convertible security in a long time. And do they exist much anymore to make this appropriate? And if it is still appropriate, this verbiage, where would I check on it?
They're still around. Convertible securities are still around. Tesla's a perfect example of a company that has issued a lot of convertible securities. And remember, basically what a convertible security is it's a bond instrument. Low yielding, and in place of yield, you're basically purchasing a call option on the company. And so when people are very bullish on the underlying company, they're willing to pay up for that call option, and therefore the yield on the security is very, very low. And typically these companies that are issuing them are not making a ton of money. They need to borrow a bunch of money. Tesla's a good example. And that's why they tend to show up near the end of these bull cycles, is because there's a lot of confidence in these companies, and there's the willingness for these companies to sell shares at higher valuations as well. And so that's certainly true. Now, is this an environment where convertible securities are very popular? Not really. Because I think there's other vehicles, there's other ways to speculate that's a more pure play on the upside of markets, right? Just buying calls outright, other speculative plays like crypto, et cetera. And so from a total risk perspective, they're not, I don't think, high risk enough for people on average. And they're a bit too complex, I think, for a lot of people as well, because of the bond side and the equity call option, et cetera. So I wouldn't use this in this cycle. Now, the next cycle might be different. It might be all the rage, but it's not something that I think is a hallmark of this particular cycle. But great question, and love that you're reading that book. But let's keep the momentum going and get back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier from New York on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Dylan from New York. I have a non-stock-related question for you guys this time. I run a company. It's a partnership LLC. And my business partner and I are always sitting on a ton of money set aside for our taxes. We pay quarterly, we pay a UBT every year, but we still have a lot of money that we keep on the side. Every time we pay ourselves, we keep on the sidelines to pay all of our taxes. The question I have for you guys is, if we have a period like from now till tax season, we've got like 3 or 4 months until we have to pay up some taxes. We have a large amount of money sitting in there. What do you think about putting it in something like a SPY or like some type of relatively safe ETF? I know there's no such thing as safe, but do you have any recommendations for where to put that money besides just sitting in a savings account where it could potentially work a little bit for us before we have to pay it up for tax season? Appreciate you guys. Hope to hear an answer soon. Thank you.
All right, great question. Well, I'll tell you what I do with my cash, and what we do is we use Marcus by Goldman Sachs. It's a 0.5%. It's pretty easy to use. And it's very liquid, high yield savings account. That's what I would do. You're talking about 3 months, very short period of time. The SP could easily drop 10% in 3 months. Not out of the question. Happens regularly. So you definitely don't want to put that in the SPY. You want to be in something very safe and liquid. And I know you're going to say, well, inflation is X. You need liquidity. You have to pay your taxes. But you, like you said, you want to earn something on it. So I would not be putting that in anything too risky. You want liquid. Now, what you could do is find a CD, and maybe you'll get a CD rate on something 3-4 months that could be higher than 0.5%. And I would search for something like that. And then you can target, you know, when it matures and when you're going to need that money and line those up. It's kind of lining up asset and liability timeframes, and that might be a better way to go. But if you want something liquid, very short term, Marcus by Goldman Sachs is probably the simplest, easiest, and best yielding that I've seen out there.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin, this is David from Montana. I was wondering if you guys could recommend a good book on chart reading. Thanks.
Well, there's a number of them. We have on our website. Let's see, I'm looking for books, and I'm going down chart, see if we can find a fundamentals classic technical analysis. There's a section, and you'll see all kinds of books under there. So go to KPP Financial or InvestTalk.com, go to education, go to the books section, and the best book out there, I think, is Technical Analysis of Financial Markets. It's by John Murphy. It's a very, very good book. One that's like a textbook that is also very good is by Robert D. Edwards, Technical Analysis of Stock Trends. I think that's the best one out there, that and the first one I mentioned. And then there's, if you want to learn candlestick charts, there's Beyond Candlesticks, a book out there by that. So there's like 4 or 5 of them on our website that you can pick, okay, that talks about charting. Anyways, take a look.
Hi, my name is Brandon, and I just started my investing, mainly Roth IRAs for me and my wife, but I also have about a $20,000 account that I'm kind of dabbling in. My question is, I made a lot of gains off of the 2020 lows, and now I'm switching to more of a like 3 ETFs, 3 stocks, like Microsoft, like kind of safer stocks. I have a 20-year horizon, and my question is simply, you know, since my retirement's so far out, how do I deal with the ups and downs? Like, it's been a very volatile year, and like I believe today it's like 3% down. How do I, you know, the mindset of not looking or just, you know, just keep investing and don't worry about the today's climate necessarily, invest for the future? Thank you.
Okay, that's an excellent question, because the biggest problem most people have is they let fear and greed control their decisions. And many people don't even think they're doing that, but they are doing it. When I say fear and greed, they feel, What happens is that your 401k, your IRA goes down 50%. Fear sets in and they tend to sell. And this is not something I'm making up. There's been study after study proving this. Then after the market recovers quite a bit, they tend to get back in. What are you doing? You're selling low and buying high. You're doing just the opposite of what you should do in the stock market. So one of the solutions is don't ever sell. Just stay in the market. If you're in a long-term investor, you can just stay in the market, buy indexes, and just hold on, and you'll be fine. Now, as you get closer to retirement, you might want to be a little bit sharper by maybe spreading out into different asset classes, bonds in particularly, to spread your risk. Okay, but it really comes down from the onset. Well, how risky do you want to be? If you want to take full stock market risk, what you do, buy an index and just stay the course. Now, if you have the ability, when the market is high, like it has been, produce some cash, and then the next recession, dump all that money back in. If you can do that when the market has crashed, you'll be much better off. Most people can't do it. The market's crashed. Oh my God, I can't get in the market. It's crashed. It's still crashing. How far do I? Maybe it goes down to zero. The fear sets in. Now, when the market's high, everybody gets greedy. For instance, you said you had a really good return from last year. What are you doing? You probably should take some of that off the table a little bit. At least, at very, very least, rebalance into more defensive type positions. Maybe some commodity stocks. Maybe get out of your high growth positions. But then you're going to have to know how to do. You're going to have to learn how to manage your portfolio. And if you can't do that or don't have the time to do that or don't want to do that, just stay in the indexes. You'll be fine. Especially if you're in a 401k and money keeps coming in and you keep having money to invest, you can just keep investing right through the crash. You want to crash because then you get to buy things on sale if you're a long-term investor. Okay? Now, if you have a question about a stock or an IRA, college savings plan, well, maybe buying a house, mortgages, reverse mortgages, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good, Dave in Honolulu, looking at inflation. What's your question, Dave?
Good afternoon. Well, from Honolulu, good afternoon. Question about 2022. If we believe that inflation is not transitory and it's going to be with us, certainly until the supply chain picks up and we maybe experience a gut in a year or so, what would you look at? What sectors in the equity industry would you look at for inflationary protective investments?
It's a great question. That depends on whether the economy remains relatively strong, grows next year, or, it shrinks and goes into recession. So that's the big question. If you viewed our webinar, which everyone can find over on our YouTube channel, Invest Talk. So you can find it over there. And one of those slides is an overview of the type of value sectors. Now, if inflation remains relatively high, now do you think it will moderate next year? That's the thing with inflation narrative. It's transitory. What does transitory mean? If we stay around 3 or 4%, is that mean that which is much higher than we're used to over the past couple of decades? Does that mean that that's transitory because it now came down from 6 to 4, or is that not transitory because it's above kind of our longer term averages that we're used to? So what does that mean exactly? But what I can say is if inflation should stay relatively elevated, there are different sectors that will do well. And the healthcare, the utility side, that's typically value sectors. And those will do well if the economy also shrinks and we have a stagflationary environment. But if we have reflation, where you have inflation remains relatively hot and the economy remaining relatively strong. You're talking about energy, commodities, industrials, financials, the cyclical names. Those are the sectors that should do well. So it depends on the growth side, not just the inflation side as well. Let's go to Rob in Georgia. He wants to talk about saving money for a home purchase.
Hey, Justin, how are you? Here's my question for tonight. I handle the finances and savings for two of my daughters, and they're much smarter and make a little bit more money than their old man. They've got 6 months worth of savings, and they're trying to save up for both either a car or a house. And right now we've just got about $50,000 just in a checking account. And I was wondering if you can recommend, is there a short-term ETF or savings for this time to get a little higher reward, so to speak?
Yeah, I use Marcus by Goldman Sachs. I'll tell you, that's you get about 0.5%. It's nothing great. You know, I believe, you know, some excess cash in there. It's better than most checking or savings accounts that you're probably getting next to nothing. 0.5% also sounds like next to nothing as well, but at least it's FDIC insured and easy to get money in and out. So that's the best you can do. There are some other, you maybe get a bit higher than that, and you can go to like bankrate.com and look for FDIC insured money market accounts or high yield savings accounts, things like that. It's probably the best way to find it, but Marcus is one I've seen that has the best rate for the kind of safety that I want. So that's probably the best you can do, unfortunately, in this very low interest rate environment.
That's excellent. And again, love the show. Keep up the good work, guys.
Appreciate it, Rob. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them for their courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. So here are some questions from iTunes reviewers. Marty Mann says, if I understand correctly, when a dividend is paid, the amount comes directly from the stock price and is reflected the next day. You must pay capital gains on the dividend. If that is correct, what is the difference between a 2% dividend and just selling 2% of your holdings in that stock? You make a great point. You're absolutely right. When a company goes ex-dividend, typically it will drop that amount of whatever the dividend is. And so the theory is, well, then if it drops that amount, then why take the dividend? Why pay the tax? Here it is. It's discipline. And that's what all these studies look at of histories of dividends. It's about capital discipline within the business. And when companies pay out a dividend, what it does is makes management conscious of that need to continue to pay out that dividend, and therefore their capital allocation becomes a bit more conservative. They scrutinize every purchase of new companies, capital outlays, etc., because they want to maintain that dividend. They don't want to be the one in charge when the dividend gets cut. And therefore, it shows that dividend-paying companies have better capital discipline than those that do not, who just occur cash on the balance sheet and suddenly they pay out, you know, they make a bad acquisition or something like that. So that's what dividends are there for.
Before we go, you can see more about today's topic. Go to investtalk.com. You want to contact me directly? Easy. Leave a message on the machine or go to investtalk.com. I'm money manager Steve Peasley, and I want to thank you for listening.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.